Led Zeppelin first toured their native UK in October 1968. From then until the fall of 1969, the group did four US and four UK tours. Their self-titled debut dropped in January of 1969, and while they were touring, they recorded Led Zeppelin II. That record dropped in October of 1969 and went to number one on the Billboard album charts. The band completed four more tours of the United States before the spring of 1970. It was then that polls showed they had taken over as the most popular rock and roll band on earth from the previous eight-year record holder, the Beatles, Jimmy Page.
The creative process for Led Zeppelin III changed because the first album had been done, I wouldn't say in a hurry, because it was done efficiently. And from the period before that, we'd already started doing a few dates in Scandinavia. And we didn't stop. We didn't stop working all the way through 1969. And we managed to do the second album during the time that we were also doing dates and tours in America. And we got our sort of first, what you call a break. And it was nice, because it was fabulous, all the energy of being on the road. It was nice to actually sort of breathe a sigh of relief and actually take in the scent of the general countryside and being home. And it was nice to be able to sort of slow the mechanism down. It didn't stop, actually, there was still writing going on, but it wasn't at this frantic pace of actually having to do a show that night, etc., etc. So the cottage in Wales was one of Robert's ideas. I don't know whether he'd stayed there with his family when he was younger, whatever it was exactly, but he knew of this cottage and he suggested that we went down there. And actually, I think everyone had an invite, but Robert and I went. You know, it was good because the acoustic guitars were there. There was literally no electricity in this place. It was gas lights. It was wonderful, log fire gas lights and little tape recorders, which then were around, little cassette tape recorders. So the electricity that was in that place was the electricity that we were producing with the music, if you like.
Robert Plant.
It had been a real fast and quite a roller coaster to get to that point. And from what I can remember, we really needed to take stock. And we were very aware or wishful to make a departure of some kind and to calm it all down a bit. And I'd been spending time since I was a child up there in the Welsh mountains in Snowdonia. So I suggested to Jimmy that we should go up there. And so we loaded everything into an old Jeep I had, including my wife, my daughter, who was two, and a dog called Strider and all that stuff. And and Jimmy and Charlotte, and off we went. And we lived on the side of the mountain and it was very comfortable, really. It was a Spartan life for a while, but it was what we needed, and we marched out every day, Jimmy with his acoustic, and sat by the side of relative waterfalls, no sign of Gollum. But it was fun, you know. I mean, we wanted to try and break away, and so we had an affinity then, he and I, and even if it wasn't really absolutely the most fruitful moment of time, it at least allowed us the space to have space. And that meant that when we went on to write further on down the line, we had developed the ability to create more space in the music.
Soon after their days at
Dronnerair,
Jimmy and Robert were joined by John Bonham and John Paul Jones at another locale to begin recording using the Rolling Stones mobile studio.
Well, we rented a cold, damp house, I think, to do it in, which was also quite inspirational because you just wanted to get out of it. So it wasn't that laid back. But I suppose it was the first time we'd ever all sat down together and just tried things, you know, tried lots of different things. We had acoustic instruments as well hanging around. And it was just really nice to sit around and just sort of stretch out a little bit, I suppose, and just experiment. The band was never about making the same album twice. It was never, oh, that was successful, let's try and do it again. And I don't know what the record company thought, they were kept away from us. They would have had to got past Peter Grant first, which they never successfully did. Armit told me that years later, that Everybody was banned. Nobody came near the studios. Kept well away. You get what we're going to deliver to you, which was fantastic. You just got all the freedom. And once we'd made one record, that was it. No, okay, let's see what we can do next.
Wildly free, wildly experimental, and wildly successful. A rare trifecta that Led Zeppelin scored, selling in the neighborhood of 300 million albums worldwide and counting. In October of 1970, Led Zeppelin III was unleashed to an audience that was chomping at the bit for it. Now regarded as a masterwork, of course, the band had to bear uneducated criticism from the rock press at the time. No matter, their march towards rock and roll immortality proceeded uninterrupted. Hi, I'm Dan Neer. Over the next hour, we'll celebrate the 50th anniversary of this turning point in Led Zeppelin's career and delve into the sumptuously remastered album and its companion disc that was issued in 2014 as part of several deluxe releases. Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, and John Paul Jones are going to be your musical guides. Welcome to Led Zeppelin 3 at 50. All access. Immigrant Song from Led Zeppelin III. That song came out as a single in the United States against the band's wishes, and it made it to number 16 on the charts. Robert Plant.
Well, you'd also got Immigrant Song, which is kind of having been up in Iceland, and again, my love of history and the way that the British Isles has been fragmented and smashed that many times by different cultures. That was a little bit of a diversion, which created a lot of tattoos and a lot of rock singers who had double-bladed axes on their biceps for a while. But I think, you know, just picking up stuff as you go along, it's pastoral is good. Because, yeah, the dynamism against that music is important. You know, I have to advocate positivity from a vocalist point of view.
Jimmy Page.
Prior to that time, I'd been in the Yardbirds, and it was really apparent what was going on in America, which was that there'd been a number of FM stations that had established. And these FM stations were playing what we'd now call alternative music to the singles. And you'd even get to hear them playing a whole side of an album. And I thought, oh boy, this is wonderful. This is the area to go in. Not the singles market, because the problem with the singles market was you have a single that everyone's worked on, you know, this is the single. And you'd find bands that did that. The rest of the album material wasn't very good because they were singles market band. Not only that, when they did the next album, they had to do something, or invariably they did, something that sounded very much like the single off the first album, so everyone knew who they were. We didn't do that.
You've heard mention of the cottage where Jimmy and Robert wrote the first batch of songs for Led Zeppelin III.
How do you pronounce that? Because I...
Brunnerreier.
Say it again.
Brunnerreier.
Led Zeppelin with a song called
Brunnerreier
Stomp, immortalizing the cottage in Snowdonia where Robert and Jimmy spent some idyllic time decompressing and writing songs in the company of their loved ones. Jimmy Page.
That's the Way is one of the ones that got written there in that period. We'd done a bit of rehearsing, I think, that time around that period. I'd sort of done some stuff at Robert's house and just getting together. I don't think John Paul Jones was there then. But I do know that when I went there was a bit of rehearsing there, okay? So there was Friends and Immigrant Song and Out on the Tiles. So there were these two areas of where the writing was coming from, and I think it's reflective in many ways, that album, and the sources. You know, the sort of gallows pole, and that is just definitely the right way to be going.
I don't know how I'm gonna could tell you I can't play with you no more. I don't know how I'm gonna do what mama told me. My friend, the boy next door. Side of those tears that filled your eyes, and all the fish that lay in dirty water dying, had they got you hypnotized? But all that lives is born to die. And so I say to you that nothing really matters, and all you do is stand and cry. All your ears have turned away, but now's the time to look and look again at what you see. Is that the way it all stays? That's the way it ought to be. Oh, don't you know that?
That was another thing that was written in that house in Bronner Eyre, up in Snowdonia.
The beautiful That's the Way from Led Zeppelin III, now celebrating its 50th birthday.
We kind of prided ourselves with the fact that nobody else could do our thing.
More of their thing in our celebration when Led Zeppelin III at 50 All Access returns after this short break.